is Lucas Moura. Oh, they've done it! I cannot believe it!
Hello, listeners, and welcome back to the Plus Dave podcast. We are, of course, the Tottenham Hotspur theme show that's brought to you by a team of Spurs fans and a Leeds fan called Dave. I'm Dags, and joining me today are just two recurring guests for this episode, Dave himself and Socrates. We've got no Elio today. He has taken a week off, and Yves Bissouma is breathing a huge sigh of relief for the respite that he might presumably get today for his performance. Not that he necessarily deserves it. We are, of course, going to be talking about our most recent result on unfortunately, which was, as you may well remember, if you haven't blocked it out yet, a 3-0 away defeat to Fulham. 3-0 being a significant, of course, because it means that the streak is over. We only managed to get to 39 games of consecutive scoring in the Premier League, which is very, very disappointing, of course, because now we have nothing left to play for this season. But anyway, we'll get on to the more of that. And as I say, to help me sift through the rubble of that performance are Dave and Sox. Dave, I will come to you first as our resident Spurs and Fulham sympathiser, I think it's safe to say. You have a soft spot for both teams for different reasons. First of all, the same question as always, how much have you seen?
In all honesty, as little as possible.
I envy you.
I didn't want your negative Tottenham juju to get me down this weekend because...
Wow, you've got bigger fish to fry at the moment, haven't you,
Dave? As you might have noticed, Leeds United climbed to the summit of the Championship on Sunday. So yeah, we are at the absolute opposite spectrums of how you feel when an international break starts. Because as everybody knows, I hate it when you lose before an international break. Well, we just went top of the league before an international break.
You can put your feet up. You can relax.
So I'm in a very good place, whereas you guys must be, you know, pretty down.
It's not ideal, Dave. It's not ideal. I won't lie. I'm tempted at this point to just pivot into a Leeds podcast. I know we joke about it every week, but if there's ever a time, I mean, let's be honest, it's a lot more interesting supporting Leeds at this moment.
I mean, it's even interesting for the international break because we've got so many Welsh players, and obviously the only games that actually matter in this international break is the Wales game, and they're playing Finland, and we also have a Finland player. So, you know, it's literally a Leeds podcast.
Let's see how we get on with Spurs for now, Dave, and then maybe, you know, if it starts really dragging, we'll switch over to Leeds. Sox, welcome back for another episode. I'm not really sure how to say this. I feel bad for being the one to break this to you, but I have a feeling we're not actually going to win the league this season. I'm really sorry to tell you, but I'm starting to accept that we're probably not any longer in a title race. I hope you're okay upon hearing this revelation.
No, I feel like my whole world has come crashing down.
Just shattered your reality.
Everything I knew and believed in has just been completely lost. No, I think any and all chance of the title has dissipated, almost certainly.
If I've lost faith, then, you know, yeah. However, we do have a huge say in where the title does actually go, because if you look at the fixtures, I think we play Man City, Arsenal and Liverpool in succession, which is interesting. So, yeah, God knows what that's going to do. I have this horrible feeling we might end up handing on a plate to those who shall not be named. But anyway, we'll cross that bridge when we get to it, that disturbing, unsettling, wonky bridge. But yeah, we lost 3-0 to Fulham. Arguably a slightly flattering scoreline, but I don't think it's unfair to say that we deserved to lose and we were not very good. And of course, it hurts extra hard having come off what was, I think we all agreed, probably our most impressive result of the season so far, best performance of the season maybe, to probably our worst, all things considered. And Charlie Eccleshare said, I think this sums it up perfectly, he goes, given the quality of the Spurs lineup, this has to be the worst performance of the Postecoglou era. No mitigating circumstances. And I, for one, find it hard to disagree. What are your thoughts on that game, Sox?
Yeah, I completely agree. We've spoken about so many games this season. We keep going back to Wolves. I was thinking about it yourself, that bloody Wolves away game. But Rent that free. Was the one where we had. Yeah, it really is. But we had so many injuries in that one and so many others. This was basically first 11 outside of Van de Ven. And from minute one, we were and we just didn't do the bit where it's like, let's come back strong in the second half. The second half started and it picked up right from where the first one left off. And to be honest, on so many different, all my Spurs WhatsApp groups were on fire during the 90, 100 minutes, whatever it was. And everybody was saying mostly the same thing, which is, I can't quite put my finger on what the hell's actually happened here. Is it something that's tactical? Have we just not turned up because there's a lack of intensity or vigor or whatever it is? Is it just one of those where it's bad day at the office? And I'm not too much none the wiser. I mean, I think they did to us what a lot of teams have been doing, we've spoken about so often now, which is coming in, making it very difficult for us to play through the middle by packing the middle themselves, forcing us out wide and then attacking us down our wide. And we found it really, really difficult. And they're such a good team with regards to recoveries and second balls. They have so many tenacious players that if you're not up for it, then they're absolutely going to kill you in that respect. And we just never really got going. And I appreciate that's a fairly cliche thing to say, but there was never a point really in that game beyond when we were 3-0 down and we actually created chances. And it's very easy to play when the game is gone and there's no pressure on the opponent has taken their foot off the gas. Outside of that, where we probably could have pulled one back, and then you never know that you ever felt we were going to get something from that game. So the only silver lining I can think of from the whole experience was that we walked away unscathed without any injuries, which is a really low bar, but it seems to happen almost every other week now. And Villa dropped a couple of points away at West Ham. That's true. But yeah, Villa dropping points at West Ham mitigated the disaster somewhat, but it was a pretty shit day at the office.
Yeah, it toned down the Spursiness just a tiny bit because obviously, yeah, now we still have a chance potentially to overtake them, but it's still far from ideal. And I think you kind of touched on it there. It's really hard to take because at half time, it had been pretty poor and we were 1-0 down, but we almost expected that at this point. That's how most of our games have gone recently, even the games that we've ended up coming out on top of. And I go into the half time thinking, oh, here we go again. Let's watch them, you know, get a little bit cocky in the second half and come and press us, open up space, and we're going to pass it around them. And I was just insanely confident for some stupid reason because I am a naive child that refuses to grow up and accept reality. But I was quite disappointed. And yeah, the XG was fairly close. Sorry, Elio, if you're listening later on, but it was, you know, pretty comparable. I think XG wise, it was, you know, more or less 2.5 each, give or take. But as you rightly say, most of that was when they were already, you know, sitting back 2-3-0 up. So I don't think that's even a fair picture. Dave, first of all, from the highlights that you've watched, does it look like it was a fair 3-0 victory to Fulham? How many of the Spurs missed chances made it into the highlights package?
Just Sons from, I think, was it the first half when it was
Madison,
a ball,
tucked it inside.
Ball across from Madison, and he kind of opened his foot and it just kind of skimmed over the top of the corner.
Yeah.
That was the only one that really came across. But yeah, I mean, Fulham are a weird, weird bunch at the moment because, I mean, looking at some of the results that they've had, and I don't think you can beat yourself up too much because on their day, they're really good. Like in December, I know we're going back a few months, but in December, they beat Forest and West Ham 5-0 each on the bounce at home.
Yeah.
They beat Arsenal at the end of December at home. They beat Bournemouth at home. They beat Brighton at home 3-0, and they beat you at home 3-0. You know, they're a bit of a mixed bag, but they have the ability to really, quite frankly, smash teams at home. You know, they won majority of those games comfortably.
Yeah.
So as much as I would like to say classic Spurs, this is, you know, return to the mean, you know, Postecoglou's been found out. Let's give some credit to the fact that Fulham did that. And also, it's okay to have one of those off days, especially when you're where you are in terms of your progression over Ange. Let's face facts. You know, I don't think any of you anticipated being as far ahead of the curve, so to speak, in terms of a project as you currently are, because you guys are in the battle for fourth, well in the battle for fourth. And, you know, if you get that, I would, and not that that's a trophy, but I would say that's a successful season.
It's top five trophy now, Dave, most likely.
Sure.
Yeah, top five in the Champions League, thanks to our buddies down the road.
Thanks to our besties.
Arsenal and West Ham doing us all the favours. But yeah, I think the most annoying thing for us is that we sat here last week, as I'm sure you'd have listened to, Dave, from the last episode, basically just mugging off Fulham at the end. Like, I think we were semi-serious, but we were just like,
yeah,
I don't know.
Too busy all this whinging about ticket prices. You know, honestly,
I know.
Here,
you must have switched off after that.
I'm here and everybody gets interrupted. I leave and you're talking about sensible things like ticket pricing and disrespecting the elderly. And I'm so confused about what this podcast has become.
No,
we bully children, but we love the elderly.
Let's just gloss over the fact that Fulham have beaten you 3-0 and now start talking about something silly, please.
It's the fact that it just sums up being a football fan and a Spurs fan in particular, because we were just sitting there saying, oh, we just smashed Villa. We're easily going to dispose of Fulham. You know, how hard can it be? We went through the list of their players and we were like, none of these guys get anywhere near our team. I don't think we even mentioned that Muniz has got 7-7 or 6-6 as it was leading into this game. I think we were somewhat disrespectful. And, you know, if there were any Fulham fans likely to hear us talking about it, I want to apologise and also be quietly thankful that we don't have a big enough reach to have been ridiculed in public for the way we were talking about them last week. But yes, one lesson to be learned is don't underestimate anybody, especially when you are us and you're capable of throwing any game in any circumstances, as we well know. So let's try and dissect it a bit, because, you know, I know you were saying it's hard to know where we lost the game, and obviously we were a little bit thrown for a loop when we didn't come out swinging in the second half like we have done in the past. I was thinking about this, and I feel like a possible partial explanation for why we look so substandard is in a couple of the players that we just rely on and take for granted, either not being there or not really being up to par. And I think we've spoken a few times about both Saar and Van de Ven in terms of how they're so good we don't even notice them anymore because it's just a given they'll give us a 7, 8 out of 10 every week. And obviously Van de Ven wasn't there. He literally was injured and wasn't in the team. So, of course, you know, had Dragosin filling in, and new to the team, unfavoured side of the defence. We could talk about him in more detail, but Van de Ven missing is obviously crucial. And also Saar, I think probably for the first time this season, maybe all season, maybe with the exception of the Brighton game, really wasn't up to it. And obviously that, and that exposed the midfield a lot, because we talked about it last week about how he makes other players, particularly Bissouma, look better. Bissouma had a torrid time in his own right. Do you think that there is any merit to the fact that we have been exposed for how reliant we might be on one or two players performing / being in the team?
No, I disagree. Okay.
I'm so glad I went on that hole. Great.
I thought Saar was actually decent in the first half, to be honest. I thought he was one of the few bright spots. However,
started okay.
We have had worse teams fielded and played better against similar, if not better, opposition at various points throughout the season. I mean, we've had Ben Davis and Emerson Royale at centre-back, and we've had games where we've looked more threatening. I mean, there have been few games this season where we've been fully in control, largely because of what Dave said about us being early in our process, largely because the majority of the season, and I think we're all getting tired of speaking about it, has been us operating at something less than full strength. But I've seen many more games from us where we've looked more composed with a worse team and a worse 11 on paper anyway. So I mean, let me put it this way. If that's all it takes for us to look that bad against what is still a mid-table team, not a bad side and a side that maybe we did disrespect last week, but a mid-table team all the same. I said last week, somebody has to finish 12th and that's probably where they'll end up. If it's those two players that lead us from being a team that can go to Villa Park and smash them 4-0 and then basically get smashed ourselves 3 or 4-0 at Craven Cottage, then our problems are far, far bigger than we think they are. So I don't think that's the case. I think it's probably more likely a combination of various players not performing for various reasons, Fulham being tactically well set up, us not being mentally quite there as much as anything else. And I think all these things probably add up together to lead to that kind of performance. And I think Dave kind of hit the nail on the head when he just said, like, I remember Pochettino, his first season, I've mentioned this so many times before, but I remember we had already beaten Arsenal and Chelsea and we had played really, really well. And I think it was the back end of that season. We went to Stoke and we got thumped like 3-0 or something. And this was a crap Stoke team that I think was about a year away from going down. And it was just one of those early project games where you knew you had it in you because the team was young and it was developing and it wasn't quite there yet. And this reminded me very much of that random Stoke game where we'd come off the back of a really good win against a really good team. And then we come up against the game that on paper you're expected to win. And they just trounce you, and it was 3, but it could so easily have been 4 or 5. And we walked away feeling a bit embarrassed, but we really could have been utterly humiliated. So, look, this is one of those where we're discussing it now because we have to, because that's what we signed up for doing this podcast. But
I
don't want to. I don't mind. I'm not saying I.
Here's sorry, the listen. First exit for the Leeds podcast coming up on your left.
I hate doing this, everybody. Stop listening. No, I don't think this is something that we're going to be looking back at 6 or 12 months from now as any kind of like seminal moment or anything. I think it's just one of those games. I mean, look, we got killed away at Brighton back in December or whatever it was, and that was another one where you got smashed. And it kind of reminded me a little bit of that. Like, these things will happen, and it's not maybe the most interesting thing to say, but this is football. This is football. And we're not at the stage where the team is well-rounded, skilled, or well-coached enough to be able to avoid these sorts of things. And it wouldn't shock me if there's at least one of these left for the rest of the season, not against the teams that you'd expect to kill you, like Liverpool or City or Arsenal, but against a similar type of opposition. And we just have to suck it up.
All that to look forward to, people. Get ready. So thanks, Ox, for perking us up. That's right, just to pick me up. But to be honest, my main takeaways from all of what you just said was that you disagree with me, but you agree with Dave. So I'm slightly hurt, but I'm going to move through it because I'm professional.
Feel Elio's shoes.
For the record, I'm not trying to bash Saar too heavily. I think my point was that he's so consistent and so good generally that by his standards, this was a little bit substandard. And obviously, Van de Ven not being there, I wasn't trying to bash Dragosin too hard, although I have seen some criticism of him. Now, Dave, given that you watched the goals, if nothing else, I think it's safe to say that Dragosin was on display for all three goals, arguably. Whether I'd go as far as to say he was at fault or could have done better, look, it's harsh in any case. First start in a new team, playing on the left where he's not used to, having to adjust to a new system. So we'll cut him some slack. But for what it's worth, do you think he deserves any criticism for any of those three goals?
I mean, He was in the shot when there was a slow-mo of a person running away celebrating a goal.
On the floor in a crumpled
At one point, I think he was looking around going, huh? Like a bit Travolta-esque in Pulp Fiction. But it happens before that, though, doesn't it? You know, it's not just one player that's 2 yards behind the striker. It's the fullback or the centre-back who's supposed to be tracking the person that's coming through that's 2 yards behind them as they come through to be able to put the ball across. So, you know, I think it's harsh to point the finger at the person who's the last person that you see when someone scored a goal, quite frankly. Mm. But yeah, he's added fuel to the fire, hasn't he, that he's not Mickey van der Ven.
There's no crime in not being Mickey van der Ven, certainly not in your first start playing on your wrong side.
How much was van der Ven?
Several times. Hey, probably about the same price, I think, wasn't he? No, actually, no, van der Ven cost a fair amount. What was it, 35 million or something? This is, again, one of these examples of where I'm very glad that no one is scrutinizing our podcast too much.
I'll load up I'll tell you in 20 minutes. I'm too busy looking at Al Hilal's squad right now.
I thought you were going to say I'm too busy looking at the Championship League table, but okay, fine. We'll come back to that.
That's like printed on the back of my eyelids at the moment.
We'll come back to that.
Van der Ven was 35 million euros plus about 15 million in add-ons. It was 50 million total package if you meet the add-ons. Whatever that is in pounds, I don't know.
Every penny.
Do you reckon that's classic, like, Football Manager add-ons? It's like, we'll get 12 million when he wins the Golden Boot at the World Cup, which he's never going to do.
Yeah, that's the way to play Football Manager, the only way to play Football Manager. Anyway, as I was saying, my instinct for the first goal, my reaction to the first goal, as harsh as this might sound, was I can't help feeling van der Ven would have been in the right place and or quick enough to put himself in between the ball and the goal there and maybe stop the shot, maybe block it. It's a lot to put on Dragosin, and I'm not trying to be too critical of it. I'm more trying to point to the fact that I feel like the way we play is so reliant on van der Ven doing what he does well, which he has done pretty much invariably all season, that it's ugly when he's not there. And, you know, to the point where maybe, and we saw that against Chelsea as well, obviously, when he went off injured, but that's a different story. I feel like it was potentially the biggest shoes on the pitch to fill, to come in, especially making your first start in unfamiliar circumstances. So I don't want to criticize him too much, and I'm not going to say, oh, he's useless and let's, you know, put him as a Royale back in the team or anything like that. I still want to see more of him. And I think he did do some good stuff when he had the ball in particular. What do you think, Sox? Watching him in that position, do you think he looks comfortable? Do you lost any faith in him, or do you think it's just an impossible task?
I'm always loath to criticize someone in a game where everybody was crap, because it's like picking you were going, were especially shit, and I'm not entirely sure he was. I mean, he's not started a game for anybody since January. This was his first time in a fairly dysfunctional team, shall we say. I don't think he was particularly terrible. I mean, I guess we can criticize him for not being as rapid as the fastest player ever to have played in the Premier League in van der Ven if we want, but it doesn't seem like a fair criticism, really. Yeah, I think it's more to do with the system itself, because what it's highlighting is that, I mean, we had this under Pochettino, and instead of van der Ven, it was Kyle Walker. Then when we lost Kyle Walker and when we sold him to City and we had to play with either Trippier or an Aurier, we didn't really do as well with a high line because we just lacked that pace. We still had Rose, but then he was finished after his ACL anyway. Really, what you're looking at is a team that needs, I mean, look, it's less of a Dragosin thing and more of a squad makeup thing for me, because if we're saying that the loss of van der Ven, which has already happened twice now this season, and unfortunately, I'm starting to worry there's going to be a recurring pattern for the rest of his career, which I know sounds premature, but this is how these things start. But we'll speak about that another time. If our defense and our entire team and our capacity to not concede depends so much on this one person's hamstrings, then forget Dragosin. Yeah. The next 2, 3, 4, 5 years, we are in deep shit until we find a way to solve that. Irrespective of any of that, it was this guy's first start for us in a league that he's barely kicked a ball in before. He hasn't started a game for anybody since January. I mean, we have a tendency to do this. People wrote off Vicari after 45 minutes of a preseason game because he didn't like the way they kicked the ball out for a corner. Kulusevski got written off after a 20-minute cameo.
Remember Vicari's first few games as well, defensively.
Well, his first few months. Forget games. He was rubbish. We have had so many examples of all these players showing very, very little, being written off, or sometimes the other way, where they get massively overhyped. And we never seem collectively as a fan base, and it's not just something that's exclusive to us. I think all football fans are privy and prey to this sort of nonsense. He'll be fine, man. I mean, have we seen enough to comment on him either way? The only thing I can tell you is that he's really good in the air. And a large part of that is from what I saw from YouTube videos, not what I've seen in real life. So I don't think we've seen anywhere near enough to make a comment on him. Did he have a good game? No. Did anybody have a good game? No. Should we be worried? Also, no. Like, if this is...
You didn't have to admit that.
If this is how he is for the next 6 to 12 months, sure, then start getting concerned. But
I think ultimately, you know, you have to kind of go back to something, a trope, which we've spoken about before, which is this is a purchase that has been made and Postecoglou has been involved in the purchase. He is going to play Dragosin. He's going to play him, and he believes that he has the talent to be good enough. And he will keep playing him, and then eventually you'll probably get to a place where he is performing at a good level and everybody's happy with him, and then Van de Ven will come back, and then you've got a great decision to make, which is the better centre-back of those two to go with your World Cup winning centre-back. You know, it's a dream scenario.
It'll be him or Romero, surely.
You really think
that's his natural side? Well, I only say that because he's a right-footer.
And well, I think he's your alternate. Crucial. I think he's been bought to be your alternate for either.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. But if he's brilliant, then we'll see what happens. But I think that's just the way it should work, isn't it? You know, you can't have what was Jed Spence? It was a club signing. You can't have club signings that play for 12 minutes and Conte goes, yeah, he's crap. I'm never going to play him again. That's not how football should work. That's not why we all pay the money. You know, we pay money because, you know, people have worked really hard to get where they have. They've put the effort in for their entire career, and some coach who has, you know, something about them has seen something about them, and then they will buy them and they will play them and they will learn the way that they want to play and they will perform well. That's how we want football to work. So, yeah, I totally agree with everything you've said. We haven't seen enough. He will definitely come good. Or we'll go on the other flip side of this, and he'll be the next Harry Maguire, and he'll just get played and played and played, and everybody will be going, why is Maguire on the pitch? Why is Dragosin on the pitch? That could happen.
Harry Maguire, future European champion, you mean?
Future left winger for England.
He's going to play every game at the Euros and be there celebrating at the end when it comes home. Yeah, exactly.
Foden's is under study at the moment. So.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I know. I agree with all of that. And I think I feel really bad at this podcast because I feel like I've just put a target on the back of a couple of players that really didn't deserve it. But I was just curious to get your thoughts on Dragosin. On Van de Ven socks, I think it's worth mentioning, if I'm not mistaken, I don't think it was actually his hamstring this time, which is encouraging news. I think it was actually a knee injury. Really?
I thought it was another hamstring.
No, it looked like it, but I heard it looked like a hamstring, but I think we'll have to double check on this. Dave, you can do some research in the background, but I think it was a knee injury, which is, you know, encouraging that it's not a recurring thing.
It's a hamstring.
Scrap that whole segment then, moving on. What I will say about Van de Ven, though, and this is something that Charlie Eccleshare highlighted.
Good that we prepared, eh?
I've got a plan B. I'm kind of cutting to Eccleshare.
You can just edit that out.
Okay. Just to clarify, sorry, this is more important stat. I hate to bring the tone down, but I shouldn't have written it. Shouldn't have written it, especially on a work laptop. But I just Googled, is Van de Ven f***ed? And there is a porn star called Van de Ven.
Wait, as in Vanda? Is her first name Vanda? Surname Ven?
No, Monique Van de Ven. Oh. If anybody wants to Google,
if anyone's
that,
listening, do not Google Monique Van de Ven. You have been warned.
That. Just going to close
repeat,
that window. Okay.
Window closed. Do not Google it on your work laptop. Absolutely, don't go and do that right now. And I will absolutely not be doing that immediately after this podcast. As I was trying to say before I was interrupted with smut, Dave. Charlie Eccleshare pointed out that Spurs actually won 12 out of the 18 games that Van de Ven has started. I'm talking about Mickey now, just for early avoidance.
This is bullshit. I just Googled that same thing and I'm not getting any tits whatsoever. It's just fucking things about Van de Ven. I've just got Reddit posts about Van de Ven's hamstring injury. This is bullshit.
Socks has a good safe search filter on his,
no,
on his computer.
I don't want to be protected, internet. Show me the smut. What the hell?
This would never happen with Elliot here.
Safe search is off and everything.
I blame the algorithm.
The point I was trying to make, really, really trying, is that Spurs are very good with Van de Ven in the team. So 12 out of the 18 games he started, we've won. We've only lost twice. Average of 2.2 points a game, and then average of 1.3 points a game without him. So yeah, I think needless to say, it's very important that he comes back soon. I think he'll be straight back in the team. But obviously, I don't want to point too many figures at Dragosin. And as Sock said, there were many other players that probably deserve a bit of a bashing. I alluded to Bissouma at the start of this. And don't worry, Elio, if you're listening, we will get on to him. I tried to cut him a bit of slack in saying that he was left quite exposed by both fellow midfielders, I would say, Maddison and Sarr, to an extent. But in spite of that, he could have done a lot better. Sox, what did you make of Bissouma on this occasion?
Similar to some of his more disappointing games of the last however many weeks or months has been, to be totally honest. I mean, I think that whole midfield was poor, and I think it was pretty telling that when we made a triple sub on the hour mark or whatever it was all three midfielders. So again, I'm kind of loath to speak too much about Bissouma because anything I say about him, I could easily say about Maddison, who since his return from injury, I think has also been pretty disappointing. I think Bentancur is the only one I can speak fairly positively about because I think we spoke about him against Villa last week, and I can't remember who it was that said it may have been yourself actually, that he looked more and more like his former self, and I kind of felt the same when he came on against Fulham, where he's starting to show, without doing anything highlight reel worthy or extravagant, you can just tell by the way that he's moving and shaping up to things and anticipating things that he's coming back into some sort of fitness. So I'm starting to get of the mind now that, are we at a point where he is ready to start over Bissouma? Obviously, we say this knowing that there's an international break, and I'm curious to see how many minutes he plays. Obviously, Bielsa is now his manager, and as Dave will let us know, you know, and has let us know in the past, he's going to be fairly run into the ground over the next couple of fixtures and stuff. But
yeah,
I mean, look, none of the three, with maybe the exception of Sarr, are really doing too much to actually warrant a starting place. I mean, it's never going to happen, but if the next game, which I think is at Luton at home or something, we started with Bentancur, Sarr and Lo Celso, for example, or Kulusevski in the middle, and Maddison and Bissouma were benched, it's never going to happen. But I don't think they can have any right to complain. And I don't think I'd be, beyond my initial shock, I don't think I'd be able to make a case for that not happening, or shouldn't be happening anyway. It's terrible English, but you get my point. So yeah, this is a very long-winded way of saying he was pretty...
He was bad.
We've still not seen the Bissouma of the first six games, unfortunately, for various reasons. But to kind of quote myself from 10, 15 minutes ago, I am still loath to pick too harshly on any individual, where I think more of our issues are collective than they are, you know, player by player or anything like that.
Yeah, certainly I wouldn't be too opposed to seeing Bissouma rotated out for Bentancur, who looked pretty good. I actually thought Højbjerg looked decent. Certainly an improvement when he came on. But then, as we said about the XG, you know, easier to look good against a team that are sitting back and already 2-0 up, of course. But definitely agree with most of that. I think Maddison, he's not quite where he needs to be yet, but let's see. Let's just keep hoping that that is just a case of his fitness returning to full strength, and then we'll get the old Maddison back soon enough. Do you think there's anything we can really do about it in the meantime? Because, you know, obviously, we're at a point now where it's almost open season on Ange, where you're allowed to criticise his decisions and his tactical choices and his selections and stuff, I think, to an extent. It's not that kind of, let's just trust him implicitly. Is there anything you can say about the next few games or what you've seen in the last few games that you would suggest he could do differently, or that you'd like to see, that you think he maybe has made a mistake? Or do you think it's just a case of, this will take time invariably, we don't have the players we need to do what he wants to do every week without fail?
I think it's 90% that way. I mean, if you want to talk about the Fulham game, it would have been nice to have seen a change slightly earlier, which isn't even something in the benefit of hindsight, because I think a lot of us were screaming the same thing, like do something at halftime or do something slightly earlier. Obviously, conceding pretty much immediately after the second half kind of put, it wasn't the final nail in the coffin at 2-0 down, but it absolutely didn't help matters. So I think I'm more than happy to criticize him for that. And we've been criticizing his substitutions, or lack thereof, more than a few times in recent weeks. Right. So that's not anything particularly new, but broadly, as boring as it is, I think so much of what I say is more long-term and long-term thinking. And I think that's just the project that we're in, really. So I'm not expecting... I mean, what's going to happen when we turn up against Luton? We see a completely new team that is playing in a different way, and everybody has leveled up 50 times, and all of a sudden this defence can function without Van de Ven if he's not there, and our issues in the width are miraculously solved, and
we think everything's fine suddenly.
Off form for months. It's Luton at home, and even though they're proving themselves to be a difficult opponent as of late, especially when they're at home themselves, it's also the kind of game you can go out and win 3 or 4-0, and all of a sudden start deluding yourself into thinking, bloody hell, we're back, let's go, win titles back on, or
and
whatever it is.
Make no mistake, I will.
Exactly. So, it's worth keeping that in mind.
The first step is admitting it.
I mean, the way we look at this stuff is in chunks. Like, are we a better team than, say, 6 months ago or something? And it feels like no, because the first 8 or 9 games started as well as they did. But I think if you probably asked Ange, I think he'd probably say yes. And that's because he has access to everything on the training ground and he's seeing these players develop and understand what it is that he wants them to do, both physically and mentally. We don't really have an insight into that, but I think it's something that we're not going to see the fruits of our labor until, you know, August, September of this year and no earlier.
And on that note, I think about halfway through that game, I think something switched in me where I don't want to say wrote off the rest of the season. It sounds really petulant, like I was throwing a strop and just rage quit Spurs. I don't mean it in that way. As in, I basically just got to a point
Sox
where I was
did
like...
did that like 3 months ago. Maybe even 5 months ago.
Yeah. But no, I got to a point where I was like, okay, we've lost this game, but it doesn't really matter. You know, it's fine. In the grand scheme of things, it's okay. Let's just see if we can play some nice football. I want to see us score a goal. I wanted the streak to carry on, the goal scoring streak. I didn't even care about the result at this point. And then that was almost like a microcosm of how I see the season now. I'm like, yeah, it'd be nice to finish fifth or fourth and get into the Champions League. But as Elio said before, even getting into the Europa League wouldn't be awful because, you know, like we said, we probably have a good shot at doing all right in that. And it'd be quite nice to see. And I take that competition seriously. I'd rather be in the Champions League, obviously, for so many reasons. But I'm almost viewing the rest of the season, the next 10 games, as almost a preseason for next season. I'm a little bit like how you were a couple of months ago, Sox, in that this is just, I want to see what we can do and I want to see how we start building the blocks for what will hopefully be a better season next year or even the year after it. Don't get me wrong, we've got some big games coming up. Obviously, Arsenal at home with a chance to put a big dent in their title hopes. You know, Liverpool with everything that happened in the last game. You know, I'll get riled up for those games and when they come around, I'll be interested and I'll watch and I'll hopefully enjoy them. But I've almost... turn my attention to just the Euros now and next season with Spurs. I don't know if you... I mean, I feel like you felt this way for a while, Sox, no?
Dave, did you say it was Monique that was her name? Because I put... I'm just alone.
Oh, dear.
Sorry, what was the question? Dangus, I wasn't...
We continue to plunge to new lows on this podcast.
I was actually listening. I've been saying it for a while, really, and I think a lot of our fans have, because that's where we're... I mean, look, I think most of us would have taken, what, 10 games left of the season, we're within touching distance of fourth. Fifth might be Champions League anyway. I don't think we're going to finish below fifth because United are crap. Even if we do and we somehow succumb to sixth, we're definitely not going any lower than that, which would be Europa League, so we're back into Europe. Like, well, basically, worst case scenario this season is, okay, no trophies, but unfortunately we're used to that by this point. Getting back into some form of good European football, i.e. avoiding the Conference League, seeing a team that we have seen be able to play well, it just needs a few fixes to be able to do that a bit more consistently. The whole club feels re-energized in terms of the connection between the supporters and the club, the bullshit from Levy with the ticket prices aside, but certainly with players and staff and fans, the vibes inside the ground are great. I mean, it's why I find myself a bit exasperated talking about these games, because even though it hurts when I watch them and it hurts my feelings and I'm sad when we concede goals and lose, I kind of don't care. I can get over them pretty quickly because it's not the kind of season where there's a tremendous amount riding on it, especially if it ends up feeling like it's a Champions League place. And I read something over the weekend after the West Ham result or something that apparently it's all but certain to be. So there's a decent chance we're actually in Champions League football next season. I think it's more than any of us could have realistically hoped for. So...
absolutely.
To be honest, we should never really admit it, but I think my happiness or unhappiness this season is probably going to be swayed by events nothing to do with Spurs, because if Arsenal go off and do something, then I'll probably be more upset if Spurs don't go off, and you never want to be that sort of fan, but it's the truth. I'm not going to pretend that that's not the case. But yeah, I don't really have too much to complain about with Andrew. We can criticize the subs, we can have question marks over certain decisions, but these things take time. And like we have said so many times, if you buy into a project, you need to accept that there are going to be mistakes that are made and they need time to iron them out. So I think it's a case of criticize, but within reason, without going overboard, I suppose.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like we're at a point now where it would take a capitulation of unprecedented levels, even for Spurs, for us to finish the season in a position where it would have seemed at the beginning of the season as a failure. You know, I think we're way over schedule now. We're way ahead of where we thought we'd be. And, you know, we might finish sixth. It's not out of the question. Man United are bad, but, you know, if we carry on throwing points away and they go on a bit of a run, we might finish sixth. But even that would be seen as more or less par for the course where we started the season, I think. But, yeah, hopefully fifth, fourth, Champions League, working okay. But, yeah, it's harder to feel as invested in the results, which takes a bit of the pressure off. And I'm hoping will lead to an enjoyable experience of watching games, not feeling like we're living or dying or our weekend is ruined by the result. We can just enjoy the moments where we play some good football. But maybe that's naively idealistic of me.
Yeah, that's never going to happen.
No, exactly. This is me firmly in denial, isn't it? Dave, did your highlights not include any other mischances from Spurs? You said there was the Son one.
The Son one and the Werner one.
Oh, he did show the Timo Werner.
Yeah, that was after the goals, though, wasn't it? That was the third one. Yeah.
It was bad. What can we say
in his defence?
I think he looks good in his defence.
Craven Cottage is a really intimidating ground to play at, so maybe that got on his mind.
They're really close to the pitch. Maybe someone shouted something at him as he was shooting.
But he had complete visibility of it. It's a tricky one. He should have scored.
There might have been a shadow over the ball, you know, from one of the really tight stands. Who knows? But no, jokes aside, I actually think, and I said this on Twitter, I think when he's on the ball, he's one of our most dangerous looking players. And if you didn't know better, if you weren't watching him running at your defence with the ball, thinking, oh, it's Timo Werner, even if he gets through, he's going to miss, he would seem really threatening as a player. That's really harsh. And if he was even an average finisher, let's say, for argument's sake, he would be a really, really dangerous forward, in my opinion. And it's so frustrating that he just seems to bottle it in front of goal so often. And I don't know if it's something that he's, you know, he's, what is he, 28, 29? It's not going to change, is it?
I feel like he needs a leather one. You know what I mean?
Just
absolutely put his laces through one and just say, let's just see what happens with this one.
Yeah.
And, you know, it might just absolutely blast through the net and it'll feel so much better. It'll feel so good about it.
Because that's what you're doing for the manager, isn't it, Dave?
You train players with
bad composure to shoot with power.
Just boot it. But the problem with that finish that was the miss against Fulham was that he didn't put his foot through it. And therefore, the touch that he had wasn't hard enough and it went wide. You know?
Yeah.
Sometimes it is a good idea to just launch it.
Sometimes, from Coach Dave, just have it. Just give it a kick. Just put your boot through it. I imagine that chance probably accounted for about 0.9 of our 2.37 XG. So,
that's probably shame that one didn't
go in. I feel like it was around that point in the game where I thought if one of these goes in, because there was a Johnson one moments before that was not quite as good a chance, but still pretty good. And I just remember thinking, you know what, if one of these had gone in, I'd back us, but it just wasn't our day. It just wasn't our day, through our own doing, of course, but it just wasn't our day. But thankfully, hopefully we can absorb that defeat and still go on and have a decent season. So, yeah, next match is in a couple of weeks. Obviously, we had the international break, so I think we should probably save talking about the losing game until maybe if we do an episode next week. I'm not really sure what else we're going to talk about next week, to be honest. We need to come up with something. We do another quiz. Get the buzzers back out, Dave. What do you reckon?
Oh, God.
Time for revenge.
As long as we don't have to have any frog porn.
No one said anything about frog porn. Just because you're turning everything into porn on this podcast, Dave, does not mean...
Froggy Van Der Ven.
There's a whole world of Van Der Vens out there.
Well, maybe we'll do a quiz. We'll see. Maybe we'll do a quiz about footballers and their risque alter egos next week.
Sounds good.
Matters of Spurs. I very much enjoyed the discourse that emerged on Twitter over the last couple of days. I don't know if either of you caught wind of this, Dave. I imagine you probably didn't. But there's a growing debate on Twitter over who would be a better captain for Spurs. And this is, I mean, this genuinely has been happening on Spurs Twitter out of Heung-Min Son and Winston Churchill. It's one of those things that no one really knows where it came from. I can't find the originating tweets, but someone obviously just responded to something and it must have just come out of context. And now it's just become like a meme. The last couple of days, there's this whole debate. There are polls,
I don't like the international break, guys.
Peak football Twitter. Yeah, it's clutching at straws and scraping the bottom of the barrel.
I've got something that's probably worth talking about. No, I didn't see that. But if you wanted something topical to talk about, where the f*** is Kate Middleton? Have you guys been following this nonsense? What's going on? Have you seen like the images and the videos and
she
stuff?
She was photoshopping her pictures or something?
She's at St. George's Park training with the rest of the squad.
Is that she's been called up to play left back, has she?
Yeah, Churchill called her up. I don't know what we're talking about anymore.
Maybe they're connected. Maybe there's a connection between Churchill being pitted against Son for the captaincy of Spurs, Mickey van der Ven's pornographic alter ego, and Kate Middleton's controversial absence. If you have any theories, plusdaypodcast@gmail.com. Email us. Get in touch.
I don't know what to say.
Yeah, but yeah, please do get in touch with us, listeners, if we haven't put you off. I feel like I say this every week. The numbers suggest that you are all coming back, and more of you are coming as well, which is nice to see. And speaking of the numbers, I think it was very interesting to see that for the briefest of moments, we were the number one sports podcast in the idyllic paradise island of St. Lucia, which was lovely. So if you happen to be listening to us in St. Lucia, thank you, and spread the word. Let's try and keep the streak going. I think we've actually fallen out of the charts there. It was a very short-lived momentary victory. But
do they just really love people interrupting people on podcasts? Well,
possibly. I don't know, but I did
we've got Spurs heritage because Jermaine Defoe is originally from St. Lucia.
I was going to say, I did have a look. We did have an academy boy who I must admit I've already forgotten his name, who was from St. Lucia. But yeah, Jermaine Defoe's mother, I believe, and his mother's family are from St. Lucia. So I can only imagine it was Jermaine Defoe's family listening to us.
If I Google famous St. Lucians, am I going to get porn stars?
You probably will. Yeah, there's probably one called St. Lucia. Be careful, Dave, with your track record.
Okay, we've started with a cricketer, so we're all good.
I feel like I've already just alienated our newfound fan base there, but anyway, so that was fun to see. We had the 15th most listened to episode that week in St. Lucia of all podcasts, not just football, which is, you know, if we're talking about putting together trophies for the cabinet, that is right up there. But yeah, follow us on Twitter, Plus Day Podcast. Email us, plusdaypodcast@gmail.com. Rate us, review us, anything you want, whether you're in St. Lucia or otherwise. We would love to hear from all of you. Guys, that's probably more or less everything until next week. Was there anything either of you wanted to add that we haven't touched on? Any other Spursy business to throw in before we wrap things up?
I feel like we've probably both said too much already.
I think that's fair to say, yeah. On that note, before Dave gets us in any more trouble, we will let you go. But thanks again for joining us, and hope you enjoyed parts of this podcast. And I hope many of you can join us next week for another one where we don't know exactly what we'll be talking about, but it will probably be some kind of nonsense. It might involve a quiz. We will probably be previewing Luton as we take stock of how many players return from the international break with two working legs. And we will look at whatever is going on in the world of Spurs. So I hope to have all of you back for then. Until then, stay classy, Spurs fans. We will see you next week. I cannot believe it.